Welcome back to the Pack-A-Day Radio Show, live from the 1250 AM and 105.7 FM, the Fan Studios, powered by the Potawatomi Sportsbook. My name is Andy Herman. Thanks so much for being here. Of course, we've got the Mason Crosby Show with Mitch Thunder Nellis coming up from 9 to 11 today. You're not going to want to miss that. And right now, being joined by a good friend of the show, Dari Carriger, PackerReport.com. You can find him on social media at Dari Carriger. Dari, it is so wonderful to be back chatting with you. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm great today, Andy. Thank you for having me on. We got to share in the extra long weekend last week, just at the weekend there. And it's rare you can't get an extra day off, but yeah, it was nice.
Yes, very much so. I'm glad you were able to enjoy it as well. We've got a lot of Packers things to kind of discuss today as Packers officially kick off OTAs. You've had a lot of great articles throughout this offseason that I want to get into as well. But as we just kind of kick off OTAs, what is maybe a couple things in storylines that you're going to be keeping an extra eye on?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's tough to glean anything from this time of year. It's very early doors, but obviously we've still got the Jair Alexander stuff going on. We've got all these rookies coming in, and they can play a variety of positions. We can probably get into Colin Oliver and guys like that who maybe not exactly nailed on where they're going to be in their first year with the Packers. But yeah, that's the kind of things that you're keeping an eye on this time of year.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the main thing to keep an eye on as well. Just exactly the Jair situation, what's going on with Elgton Jenkins, and just to see how some of those things work out. And like you said, some of the positioning as well. Those are always good things to just kind of glean at this point where, again, you don't get pads on or things like that. So you don't want to take anything too seriously that actually happens out on the field. But one of the things that's going to be really important for Green Bay as they start kicking off OTAs and get to training camp, et cetera, is that they get off to a strong start to the 2025 campaign. Of course, it's always important. It's been something that's been a little bit of a struggle at times for the Matt LaFleur coach teams, and there's always that should they play in preseason, not play in the preseason conversation. But this year they kick off against two of the best teams in football, at least a season ago, in Detroit and Washington, both games at home. It's going to be paramount that they start off strong. Is there anything that you think that they can do to get off to a better start and really try to make sure that they're at least at minimum not going 0-2 to start those two games?
Yeah, that's something I never really gave much thought, was the idea of maybe playing your starting team later on in the preseason, just because it's a gauntlet to enter the season straight away. I can sort of talk myself into liking it. I mean, if they beat both teams, it's like, okay, Green Bay is going to the Super Bowl. If they beat one of them, at least they've proven they can beat a contender. And if they lose both, it does kind of stink, given that they're home games. But, you know, things can change fast. You can always say, you know, it's the start of the season, we can turn things around. So I don't mind it. I've talked myself into liking the start of the season, but yeah, I would be interested to see if we see more of the starting team and more of maybe Jordan Love in preseason because of this.
Yeah, either way, they've got to figure out a way to get off to that strong start this year with those two opponents coming into Lambeau those first 2 weeks. You did a great feature, Dari, on which, you know, kind of players the Packers are going to be facing in 2025 and some of the best players that they're going to face each week. Obviously, we don't need to go through all 17, but who are some of the players that stood out to you that Green Bay is going to be taking on this year?
Yeah, I love doing that article because it just gives you a picture of some of the matchups that are going to, like, some players have a real, like, trial by fire to start the season. For example, I'm pretty sure, yeah, they face Myles Garrett, Micah Parsons, and TJ Watt in their first seven games. You're pretty much talking the top three pass rushers in the league there in the first 2 months of the season. So, like, if you've got a rookie in there, like, or even if Jordan Morgan or Belton was to win a tackle spot over Rashid Walker, like, that's not an easy position to be coming right into. I still think the very best player they play is still Justin Jefferson. Of course, we got him two times a year, every year. And then one of the more fun elements of it, I thought, was they play Jaden Daniels in the second week of the season and then Lamar in the second last week of the season. So they're both, like, they have similar talents against zone coverage, high completion percentage kind of guys. So it'll be interesting to see if Green Bay have learned anything from week two and just the development of the team over the season heading into face Lamar in the final week.
That Week 17 game against the Ravens is so intriguing to me because obviously the Ravens are a really good football team. You played at Lambeau. It's a cold weather game, but they're also built for cold weather football with Derrick Henry and Lamar Jackson being able to run the football. Mark Andrews, big physical tight end, big offensive line. So I'm just interested to see how that game kind of goes. And it could be maybe one that gets Green Bay a little bit ready for that opening game, or the playoffs, I should say, as we get closer to the end of the season. We're being joined by Dari Carriger. Of course, you can find him on social media at Dari Carriger, and of course on PackerReport.com. You had another great article this offseason about Matthew Golden and sort of the routes that he ran in college and how that could potentially translate to the NFL. What did you see on tape from Golden, and how his route tree can kind of transition over to what the Packers like to do?
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of an interesting watch. I watched him at Houston first and then at Texas. I felt he was a little underutilized at Houston, and, you know, credit to Texas for being able to identify that. Now, as the season progressed, Texas started to use him a little better, I felt. And, like, it can take time to figure these players out. You have to remember he was only there for 1 year. It's kind of why the draft is such an imperfect process overall. But yeah, just in general, Texas had Golden running across the formation quite a lot. They had a lot of slants, crossers, post routes. They also got him breaking out towards the boundary. I mean, watching Houston, like, he was a run some go routes, run some curls, run some hitches, and that was about it. It was pretty boring to watch. But Texas definitely spiced it up a little bit. He's got, like, this really, really nice out route, and he can run it in any number of ways. He can run it slow, fast. The tempo can change whatever way he likes, and he's just such a natural at, like, that ball tracking when you're moving away from the ball and, like, towards the sideline, and then that sideline awareness is part of the reason what made him such a great prospect, and that does tie in nicely to the Packers. They're a big out route running team. The other, like, point I would make on that is that like, Romeo Doubs is a big dig route, like, backside digs. He runs these in routes, which are usually, like, the second or third read on a play, because you got the guy running into the QB's periphery from the far side of the field. I would imagine that might play into the hands of Golden, who's going to be that first read on the side that Jordan Love's looking to quite often. So, I mean, if Matthew Golden's getting open, he's getting the ball. It's as simple as that, and that's a very exciting prospect for us.
Yeah, very much so. And you add in, you know, if you get to a point where maybe you do have Doubs on the backside, like you said, with that late route, Matthew Golden is maybe the primary read on the outside, maybe whether it's going deep or running a deep post, whatever it might be. And then if you have your second read is maybe a slot player in Dontavian Wicks in the slot, who only consistently gets open, like, almost every single time he's out on the field to a ridiculous extent, you could have quite the progression of guys that know how to get open with their specific routes within that route tree. And obviously just a lot of options for Jordan Love, assuming that those players can catch the ball, specifically Dontavian Wicks, who had a little bit of an issue with that this past year. You also took a look at Matt LaFleur's route tree. You kind of mentioned some of the dig route stuff there just a moment ago, but it's a really interesting article and a really interesting exercise. What were some of the main things that you gleaned from looking at all the different routes that the Packers ran this past season?
Yeah, I mean, it feels like they've kind of simplified it to an extent this season. There's been less double moves, less kind of things like that. I mean, LaFleur has a pretty consistent offensive design in that he doesn't run a ton of, like, shallow crossers. There isn't a ton of, like, of those cheap yardage that maybe other teams pick up on. But, you know, as I said, the backside dig, that is one of Green Bay's staples, and nobody in the league runs it better than Romeo Doubs. I can swear on that now. He is just an absolute savant in that role. They mix things up. I like their Jaden Reed package out of the slot. That definitely expanded a lot more towards the end of last season. It maybe didn't correlate to, you know, an improved production for Jaden Reed, but he definitely started to get open more as the season went on, and just towards the very tail end of the season. So I'm excited for a big Reed bounce back once he's got, you know, a full season under his belt working as a full-time slot, which I imagine that's what he's going to be doing in this team now, when you've got really... I can see Golden being that Z receiver with Doubs as the X, and then you've got Wicks obviously in there too. You've also got Quentin Johnson in there too. So they're not stuck for ways to find guys open on this team. So it'll definitely be something that's worth monitoring as the season goes on.
Yeah, how those snaps get divided at wide receiver, I think, is going to be something that's extremely interesting. I'm going to keep picking your brain on awesome articles that you've done all offseason long. Again, we're being joined by Dari Carriger, PackerReport.com. You can find him on social media at Dari Carriger. You wrote a great article about the differences between Joe Barry and Jeff Hafley and how they kind of go about calling games, putting their scheme together. What were some of the key differences that you noticed when you kind of went through that exercise?
Yeah, so we were all like completely wrong on what we, well, I was anyway, on what I predicted Jeff Hafley would be bringing to Green Bay. I was preaching all season last year, oh, here comes the big cover one heavy defense. He ran out of Boston College. It made so much sense. They brought in Xavier McKinney as this single high safety, and everyone else is going to be man heavy, and it just kind of was the complete opposite. The Packers are now a very much cover two heavy team. I think they were about fifth most in the league last year in cover two. But the good part of that is it's the sign of a defense coordinator willing to adjust and embrace to the way defensive football is headed in the modern era, and not like die on the hill of how he's coached for years gone past. So that's a good sign in my book. The other big difference was the blitzing tendency on third down. The Packers went from 29th to 3rd in third down blitz rate in the course of one season. And like, they get creative with it too. That's not just like five down linemen. They've got, you know, Edgerrin Cooper can blitz, Quay Walker can blitz, Nixon can blitz, Williams can blitz. They've even brought in like Nate Hobbs was a blitzing threat out of the slot in Las Vegas. Isaiah Simmons is a pretty big beast of a blitzer if you can see the field too. So they can get creative in that aspect. I mean, they disguise their safeties more. They've ran more simulated pressures. And, you know, I am aware, like, I'm painting all these things in a positive light. Like, if safety disguises are so good, why doesn't everybody call them on every single play? There is a downside to all of this mixing up play calling, and that is that you can confuse your own team. You can get your defensive guys thinking too much and not playing, you know, loose and free. The good news for the Packers is that they were pretty much doing that in year one. And, you know, practically the entire defense is back. They've got all these guys back there memorizing, you know, these calls, stunts, drops, checks, disguises. It's all logged in their memory now. So I would like to think they're able to play even more fast and more free now in year two with less processing required, if you want to call it that. So, you know, I'm optimistic that, you know, you're still confusing the opponent as much as you always were, but your guys are so much more comfortable in this variety of different roles and mixed up looks.
Yeah, I think that's really well said. And I think the thing with Hafley that stood out to me, and I'm right there with you, I thought we're going to see a lot more man and, you know, kind of single high safety kind of looks and things like that. But one of the things that stood out to me with Hafley in his very first press conference is he's like, you know what, we're going to change up what our defense is based on what our players do best and what, you know, the opposing defense struggles with, or excuse me, the opposing offense struggles with. And I think that's exactly what we saw. I think he didn't have exactly the corners, especially once Jair went out, to be able to play maybe a lot more of that man-to-man coverage. He recognized it. He adjusted. He built a defense that was going to be successful for the players that he had going against the offenses that they were playing against. I think that was my favorite thing about Jeff Hafley, is he was not afraid to change it up in any moment and put his best defense out there and just figure out ways to be successful with the players that he had. And I'm confident he's going to do that again. And if Jair is back, or if their, you know, corners all of a sudden get better at man coverage, I could see more man coverage down the road. But otherwise, he's built a very successful zone coverage defense that I expect to still see a heavy dose of this upcoming season. All right, Dari, you got a game in Ireland coming up this year. I know you're excited for it. I know you were wishing it was going to be Steelers-Packers. It did not end up being Steelers-Packers, but you still get Steelers-Vikings, which is a pretty intriguing game. Are you going to be attending the game, and just what does that mean to Ireland to have an NFL game taking place there?
Of course I'll be there. I can't wait for it. Yeah, I mean, I was kind of on the boat the whole time where there was a lot of word about Green Bay, and I just couldn't picture it in my head. I couldn't imagine them sending Green Bay on the road for a second straight season, especially just given the brand the Packers have. Like, this is firmly a Steelers home game. They've been pushing that the whole way, and the reality is it really just wouldn't have been a Steelers home game if you brought Green Bay, because their fans travel so well and they've such a pretty established brand over here. So, I mean, I'll take it. We've got two Hall of Famers on the field at the same time when the Vikings are on offense. But enough about J.J. McCarthy. Justin Jefferson and T.J. Watt are pretty good too. This is a pretty strong, like, I mean, you're going to get 83,000. It's probably going to be reduced down to around 80,000 fans. And I do have fair warning for NFL fans when they wake up and watch this one at 8:30 a.m. in the U.S. is that the field is going to look comically small, because the stadium field is significantly bigger. Like, I'm pretty sure the sidelines are going to be the width of the entire field. But once you get that out of your head, it's going to be a pretty spectacular scene in Dublin. So I'm very much looking forward to it.
I can't wait. It's going to be such a cool scene there, and I'm excited for you that you get to watch Steelers-Vikings, and maybe maybe Aaron Rodgers will be there playing for the Steelers. What is your take on this entire situation? Is he going to play for Pittsburgh? Or like, are they being ridiculous and waiting this long? Like, how is this ultimately going to play out? And are you going to see Aaron Rodgers play for the Steelers in Ireland when you're there?
It feels like nothing in this story ever changes. Like, it feels like we're in the exact same place we were a few months ago. Both sides seem to think the ball is in their court and nobody else really cares. I sort of care because I want to see Rodgers in Dublin, but like, that's about it. If it's not him and it's Mason Rudolph or someone, whatever, it'll not be a deal breaker. The game's going to sell out either way. But I want to see Rodgers back as a fan of Aaron Rodgers, and I'm pretty sure that every other Green Bay Packers fan has that same opinion. But it's gone on so long, and you know what, Andy, I'm just really glad that Green Bay are not involved in this again, like they have been for so many years.
Yes, no quarterback controversy or drama this offseason, which is very nice. And I think the wonderful thing about Aaron Rodgers is he is one of those polarizing figures that is, the Brady had this about him as well, but people will tune in to watch Aaron to either win or to lose. Like, they're either going to be cheering heavily for him or heavily against him. And I think that that's just good for the NFL. I think that's a fun brand of football to watch when you have a rooting interest one way or the other. And if he's back, I'm sure his games are going to be highly watchable. And especially with Pittsburgh, they've got a good roster surrounding him. Interested to see how that would look with DK Metcalf. So it feels like this is going to happen, but the longer it goes on, you're just like, all right, can this just happen already? But I'm going to be interested to see if it does get finalized sooner rather than later. And they got OTAs, minicamp. Maybe he just wants to avoid all the OTAs, minicamp stuff, which is why he's maybe waiting. And then once training camp comes along, maybe he'll sign that deal. But either way, it should be interesting. And for your sake, hope he is ending up playing in Ireland against the Vikings, which should be a very exciting game. All right, Derry, what do you got cooking over on Packer Report, and where can we find you on social media?
Yeah, I'm going to have an article coming out sometime this week, probably focused on the defensive side of the ball, maybe a little more on Colin Oliver, Baron Sorrell, and what that means for that pass rushing unit. You can find me on X pretty much exclusively at this point, at Derek Arher. Just type in D-A-I-R-E, and there's probably enough Packers mutuals there that you can hopefully find me. So thanks always for having me, Andy. It's a real pleasure.
It always is as well on our end. We'll definitely do it again soon. Enjoy your week, your first week of OTAs, and we'll definitely talk to you again in the very near future. Appreciate you a ton, my friend. That brings us to the close of this segment for the Packaday Radio Show. We're going to be right back talking about a little bit of Jaire Alexander. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back right after this.